Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Like I said, I'm used to people just like calling in from their car.
I'm trying to do it right. I'm trying to do it right for you, dude.
It's much appreciated. This is, I was telling Mike, like, this is the most clear I've ever heard a guest. So I appreciate
you. We're raising the game going into 2020. That's what we're doing. It's all about clarity. 2020 is about clarity.
That's right. Literally.
Today we are joined by a very special guest, Kevin Carroll. So usually right now I would tell you what our guest does, but it's really hard to put into words who Kevin Carroll is or what it is he does exactly. He's a keynote speaker and he's an author, but those titles don't quite do him justice. After 10 years in the Air Force, Kevin became an athletic trainer at a high school in Pennsylvania, which led to a job as the head trainer at St. Joe's, which eventually led to the job with the Philadelphia 76ers as their head athletic trainer and director of sports medicine. And after several years with the 76ers, he caught the eye of Nike CEO Mark Parker, who decided that he had to have Kevin on his team. He hired Kevin and told him to create his own position. The title Kevin came up with, Catalyst. At Nike, Kevin would work with designers and marketing teams, and he played an instrumental role in several of Nike's award-winning campaigns. Kevin would eventually leave Nike to create his own company called Kevin Carroll Catalyst with a K, where he would go on to publish 4 books and speak to groups all over the world. We are extremely fortunate to have him as a guest on our podcast. We hope you enjoy our conversation and all of his wisdom. We asked him to take a trip down memory lane and talk about his experience as an athletic trainer and relate it to coaching. If you enjoy our conversation and you enjoy the podcast, please let us know by subscribing and writing us a review and follow along with what we are doing at risingcoaches.com. Before we get into today's episode, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Rising Coaches Association. Since 2010, Rising Coaches has put on unbelievable events, and people would always ask us, how do we get involved with Rising Coaches? What can we do to help the cause? And to be honest, we never really had a good answer until now. Sign up today for the Rising Coaches Association and become a part of our community and our network. You will receive exclusive content and you will make genuine connections to others in the coaching profession that will help you both personally and professionally. Visit risingcoaches.com/membership and sign up today.
Kevin, thanks for being with us today, man. How are you?
I'm good, Adam. What's happening?
Not much. Just been looking forward to this conversation all week, and I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Yes, I've been your hype man. I've been letting a few folks know that I was going to be on the Rising Coaches podcast, and they happen to be hoops coaches here in the area here from Lake Oswego High School, and so they were very excited that I would be joining you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, great hoops up in the Pacific Northwest.
We do know how to produce point guards, right, and guard play, right? That's our thing up here for some reason. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, and coaches. Yeah. Some really good
and
coaching
coaches,
up there.
Yep, yeah. Coaches and guards,
yep.
Here, right?
That's not a bad thing to be known for.
It's not. Right. Come to the Pacific Northwest if you need somebody to lead your team and be your floor general. That's what happens here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Kevin, I just...
Get you buckets.
Yes. Well, man, I just wanted to start by saying how grateful I am to have you on the podcast and just a little background for our listeners. I first came across you. I'm a big fan of the Finding Mastery podcast with Michael Gervais, and I listened to that religiously and came across your episode with him. And it was so powerful, such a moving episode, and I got so much out of it. And I usually don't do this, but I just felt compelled to reach out to you. And, you know, fortunately you hit me right back and fast forward. Now we got you on our podcast. So
no, it's all good. And so when you had me at Finding Mastery, right? So, so when you hit me with that on, you know, when you DM'd me on Twitter and stuff, that was cool. I thought, you know, and I actually forwarded your note to Mike to just let him know that, you know, people are listening and it's really wonderful, you know, within all kinds of circles. So, no, it was all good. As soon as you sent that note and said that you had listened to that exchange that Mike and I had, and I thought it was pretty robust and magical what we were talking about. And we actually did it live in my office space. So we had actually recorded that in my office space, which was really cool. He happened to be in Portland. So I'm so glad that it resonated with you, and now we find ourselves having a combo.
Absolutely. And I highly recommend our listeners to go back and find that episode, because you really dig deep into your background and, you know, your upbringing and the things that molded you into who you are today. And I want to take you back a little bit to get started here, to your career as an athletic trainer. You know, you did a lot of things early on in your life and spent some time in the military, and then you found yourself as an athletic trainer for St. Joe's. And, you know, jump in and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the story goes that the Philadelphia 76ers used your facility for some practices, and you caught the eye of their staff. Is that right? And then the Sixers brought you on?
Yeah, that's right. So to be accurate, I was a high school athletic trainer first, right, at two local high schools there, private schools, the Haverford School and Episcopal Academy. And then I got the job at St. Joe's University, and I didn't know that that was the Sixers practice facility, and it had been that for years because they didn't have their own. So they had been coming to St. Joe's for years, long, long time. And so that was kind of a surprise to me, and they shared our athletic training facility and the room. So that's how I got to see the players walk in and out every day and got to know the staff.
So I want to ask you this. You did something to catch the Sixers' eye to make them want to hire you and bring you onto their organization. And I've been in athletics for a long time, and trainers don't catch your eye. Like, that's not normal. Like, what you get your trainers through referrals. You get your trainers through their resumes. What was it that you were doing? And I have my own theory on this, but what was it that you were doing that caught their eye and made them want to reach out to you?
You know what? I honestly think, Adam, is I wasn't chasing it. I was just doing what I was hired to do at St. Joe's. And I wasn't enamored with nor had this aspiration to be with the NBA. I was doing the job that I was hired to do, and I was doing it what I thought was at an exemplary level. And so it wasn't about, oh, maybe they could, or maybe I could, or maybe that could be my future. I didn't have any delusions or thoughts about that at all, quite honestly. I just was doing what I was asked to do, and I wanted to do it at a very high level. So I think that was a big part of it, where most people would be so enamored with their presence that they would almost devalue where they were in a hope for getting the come up there with the Sixers, right? Like, so, oh, St. Joe's is cool, but man, if I could get there. And so what you end up doing is begrudging, not doing as great a job, and trying to get them to see you. Look at me, look at me, look at me, kind of a thing, versus let me just do what I've been hired here and do it at a very high level. And I'm not trying to get you to notice me. I'm just supporting whatever you guys are doing. And that really was it. I was just helping them out during the day when my student athletes were in school. So it was in between classes that they would come. So I would just help out in the mornings with them. But it wasn't even a thing where I was trying to get their attention or impress them. It was none of that. It was just like, I can help out. But as soon as my student athletes came, they got my full attention. And then I wasn't running back and telling people what I did today with the Sixers or how I helped out or how they pat me on the back or these kudos, the accolades I was getting, because I wasn't chasing that. So I think that was what they were really impressed with, was that it wasn't my aspiration. My goal each day was to do my job well. And then I think that's what they noticed.
Yeah, it wasn't about you. It was about the people that you were serving.
Yeah, I was in service, right? It was just about in service. And if you're asking me to help, I'm happy to help. But I'm not going to do that, you know, as a detriment to the service I have for my student athletes at St. Joe's. I think that was a big part of it.
And then I imagine with that, they get, you know, a front row seat to see how you interact with others and the people that you're around and your energy and the vibes that you give. And you talk a lot about that in your books, Rules of the Red Rubber Ball and that series of books about, the concept of play and being in the moment and being present and enjoying and loving and embracing what you do. How much of that, you know, is key to your success and key to what you were doing at that time?
I just think that, you know, the idea of how you show up and the energy you bring consistently so that you become known for that is something that I endeavor to do every single day and to really present that and to represent that on a daily, right? So I think that's an important thing for me is energy. And so how you show up and how that you are a presence that way, and so that people can feel that in the building, know that you are there, know that you have a presence, but also that it's not some fabricated fake thing. This is who you are. And I think that's a key thing is you have to stay true and be really, really aware of, you know, the way that you show up and what kind of energy you bring and not faking your energy. So you may be a low energy person, but you're very present, right? You bring something also with that. Or you may be a high energy person, but it's not fake energy. Just like, hey, let's go. Come on, y'all. Let's bring a great, because that might not be you either, right? And so being true and knowing your presence, your voice, the kind of energy that you can bring consistently and sustain that energy, people will start to understand that's you. But I think you have to have done that due diligence and that reflective work and self-reflection and introspective work to know who are you at your core? How do you want to show up each day? What matters to you? And how are you going to be connecting with and exchanging with others? And I think that's, you know, and what do you want to bring consistently? What do you want people to reflect back to you? Because if you bring low energy, they reflect that back to you. So don't get upset with that, right? Don't get upset like, how come they're not bringing me no juice? I'm not getting no juice from them because you ain't got no juice.
Right.
So.
Because people do. They mirror you a little bit when you're interacting with somebody. They're going to mirror.
They always do. They can fight it, right? Either way, on either end of that spectrum or continuum, right? But if you start bringing low energy, you can see the room lower. The energy lowers. The body language changes. You bring good energy, people respond. If you bring high energy, people respond. Even if they're – but only if it's real. That energy has to be real because they can tell if you're faking it. Especially, you know, coaches who are coaching, you know, youth, high school, collegiate level, and they're younger than you. Man, they're so discerning, so aware, right? So just keyed in on – are you faking that or is that really who you are? So I just think that you have to have this honest presence every single day, but recognize that they do what they see, right? And they reflect what you bring.
So it starts with that self-awareness. What are some strategies? I mean, because that's such a big thing and I don't want to just skip over it. Like, what are some strategies to figure out who you are and who the type of person you want to be on a day-to-day day-out basis?
You know what? Quite honestly, Adam, you know, when you start thinking about who you are, the kind of person that you want to be, you know, it goes way back, right? I mean, those formative years, we were actually just having a conversation about, you know, what sparked you when you were younger, right? If you're coaching, well, what was that? What's your origin story around that? Why coaching, right? And if you can get in the way back machine and kind of see that and understand like, oh, it was this moment that I got sparked. And that moment, I knew I needed to be around this. Because if you can't tell that story and you can't feel that each morning to understand what's your why for coaching, then you're going to have a tough time. Then it's more that you start to resent it or begrudgingly you're going to do it. And I always say you got to have something that gets you out of bed in the morning, right? Something that is a source of joy. And so can you say that about coaching first? Right? Can you say that about your profession, whatever it might be, right? It might not necessarily be coaching, but is it really math, right? So that's why you're in economics or science. That's why you're doing this work. Or it's art. That's why you're doing this work, right? It's technology. That's why you're doing this work. And you can tell me the origin story. You can tell me when you got sparked by it. You can tell me that moment where you knew, like, I want to be around that. And if you can tell that story, then you understand the why, right? And Simon Sinek, I think we actually talked a little bit about that, his whole start with why, right? It's a great TED Talk. If anybody wants to look it up, it's been viewed a gazillion times, right? It's crazy popular, but it's really, really fundamental. Start with your why. Why coaching? You should be able to tell that story. And that should be the reason that you're invested in it every day. Start with that. That's a fundamental, right? Self-awareness is, here's my why. That's why I'm involved in it. Okay, so now let's go from there. How do you stay immersed in it from there? How do you stay attached to it? How do you stay connected to it? How do you let people know you're about it? And once you start doing that and you're showing up consistently, people start to notice and they want to rally around you. Hey, I noticed, Adam, that you're really into hoops. Hey, I saw this book. I saw this article. I saw this podcast. I heard this podcast, right? I saw this film. Have you seen any of this? I just want to share some things with you. People start rallying around you and want to support you, but you got to demonstrate it on the regular. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And even more, to take your examples further, let me introduce you to this person who I think you click with. And that's, you know, it's a relationship business, and that's what leads to relationships that impact you personally and professionally.
Yes. And so when you talk about relationships, go back to that early question you asked me about the Sixers. It was relationships. It wasn't me searching, hunting, chasing that role with them. It was, I'm just doing, and how can I help? I'm of service. I'm here. Can I help? I don't have anyone here right now. And so they noticed that I was willing to do that. And that selfless act over and over and over made them see me. Like you said, athletic trainers tend to be invisible. Yeah, we are, right? It's kind of our nature to just do the work. But I also have this other part of me, right, which is about belonging and connecting and engaging with people, because I'm all about community, building community. So I can't fight that natural part of me. I want to connect with you. Right. So what's your story? How can I help? What's your story? How can I help? So that was just a natural thing that happened. We built a relationship, and then all the other things came as a byproduct of that relationship building.
Kevin, I'm so glad you brought up community and that interaction that goes on, because anybody that's been around athletics, you know this, and anyone that's been around sports knows this, is like the training room. For whatever reason, that's where all the conversations happen.
That's the spot, dude. Hashtag real talk in the training room, dude.
I don't know what it is, but yeah. for whatever reason, it's like everyone's safe space. And so how do you know, that's a lot of pressure for the trainer. Like, that's your domain, and everyone's coming to you speaking without a filter. You know, how do you juggle all of that?
Well, I just think so. My approach was that I really used this analogy that I was a UN ambassador and everyone was their own country. And so, what were the rules of engagement with each of you? Right. So athletes are all different, right? So I treat you all differently. So I would speak to everyone a little differently. I would greet everyone a little differently because I start to get to know you, and they notice that. I wasn't this blanket policy, if you will, of how I engage with you. I would engage and meet you where you are. And so once they start to understand that and understand that you as an athletic trainer have a unique bedside manner, if you will, right? You have a unique way of approaching us. They want to come in there and hang out. So the coaches would end up sending someone to get them out of the training room. That's how you know you got a good training room, right? When they're just in there, they're not hurt. They're just in there. They've already been taped, right? They've already had the modalities, the hot pack, you know, ultrasound, right? Massage, whatever, and they're still hanging out. That's how you know you have a good community around there, right? And you have trust. And that is one of the biggest things I learned from the person who taught me the craft of athletic training, Randall Gene Matthews. I always have to give him a shout out. Angelo State University, an amazing human being. He taught me that it's always going to be about your communication and relationships, because you can tell a good athletic trainer by the way the athletes react when you put your hands on them. Watch the games, watch the hoops games, watch when someone goes down, and the athletic trainer, if they're really, really aware of, the first thing they do is they put their hand on the athlete to calm them down. But you can tell if the athlete trusts that athletic trainer because they their body calms down.
That's interesting. It's something I've never looked for.
Writhing in pain, that athletic trainer comes out and they put their hand and you notice the athlete stops. That's trust. That takes time. That's communication, right? It's interactions, right? It's engagement. And that's a big part of what he taught me. He said that is the most telling thing about the relationship you have with an athlete is if they calm down when they are scared, they are injured when you put your hands on them. He would always tell me those are the greatest modalities you ever have at your disposal are your hands. So once I understood that, I took that to the next level about how do I engage with each of you. I know you might be part of a team, but you're individuals also. So in here, you can be that individual. That's the way it was in the athletic training room. I can't take care of or affect your minutes, your stats, right, your scholarship, but I can keep you healthy and ready. So we have an agreement. When you come in here, let's be about what we're trying to get accomplished. But we can have some fun in here too, and it's the safe space. Coaches were not allowed to come in. They understood. If you come in, right, it's almost like the record, right, scratch, right? Right. It stops.
Right.
Right? And the coaches, the good coaches know, right, that's sacred time. The good coaches only poke their head in. They don't even walk all the way in. How about that, Adam?
Right.
The really good coaches would just poke their head in. Hey, Kevin, can I get an aspirin? Hey, Kevin. So they wouldn't even cross the threshold.
That's interesting.
While the student athletes were in there. Now, when they were off in class or whatever, right, or when, you know, the players weren't around when I was with the Sixers, the coaches could come in there and do whatever. But as soon as players started coming in, the coaches would get up and leave.
Mm-hmm.
They understood.
Well,
they
and I
understood that was a sanctuary.
Yeah, and I think that's a great tell for a team's culture is, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a fly on the wall in the training room and you're listening to the conversations that go on in there, you know, are people coming in and bitching about playing time and about
yep.
the coaches? You know, are they talking about, you know, the party they went to last night or is it different? You know, you can
yes.
tell a team's, you know, values. And if you have a trainer who's in tune to that, I think you've got an unfair advantage, you know, and
oh,
I think that's
absolutely.
Something that programs just skip over. You know, they don't yes. take that into account.
Yeah, I think that they don't see the value add that the sports medicine staff can have and that athletic trainer can have for you culture wise, right? In building and sustaining and elevating the culture. Because if you want that to be an extension of the locker room and the court and the team bus and the hotel, you want that to all be integrated. And so what's going on there is amplifying our culture. It's not a separate entity. So when you said such a loud thing, it's a great tell if the players are coming in there bitching about minutes, about stats, about accolades, versus did you see what happened here? Did you see this in the media? Did you hear this story about – and they're talking about the game? Did you see this play that so-and-so did in the league, right, when I was at St. Joe's, right? And even players, what's so amazing in the NBA, are watching other sports. So they're not necessarily watching just the NBA. They're marveling at their college teams, football. They always loved watching their college teams and bragging about that, right? But also looking at NFL football. They're looking at baseball. They're looking at ice hockey. They're looking at other things because I'm immersed in basketball all the time. So they would look at other things or what's happening out in the public domain, in the social circles, right? And culture, right? And fashion was a big deal. They love talking about people's – what they wearing, right? Are they showing up nice? And it's even more of a runway now. But even back then, it was what are you wearing, right? Where'd you get that? Can I get some of that, right? It was so amazing to hear the conversation had nothing to do with ball. Nothing.
Kevin, what do you do – because a lot of our listeners are, you know, maybe they're in support staff roles or they're the GA and they have a different relationship – with the athletes, and maybe the athletes do feel a little bit more comfortable spouting off to them and may come with them, you know, complaining about playing time or shots or whatever. How do you rein that type of talk in without sacrificing that relationship or breaking that trust?
Well, I think once again, it's the rules of engagement, right? If you see yourself as this delegate on behalf of the coaching staff, if you see yourself as a representative and ambassador for them, you need to understand how to engage with each player. So it's not going to be a blanket thing. And players will relate to you uniquely. So your energy, once again, will be one of the first tells, right? How they talk to you. So if they think you just little coach over there, right? You little coach. So I don't trust you. Or if they see you as, hey, you trying to get yours too. You're trying to raise your game. You're trying to find your way. So you're me just a few years removed. So I get it, what you're trying to do. You're trying to gain and grow and all that. But it's, once again, it's going to be the personality you bring, the energy you bring, how you show up. If you're showing up being an extension of the head coach, then just know they're going to treat you that way. And if they don't have a good relationship with the head coach or don't trust the head coach or the staff, they're not going to trust you. So it's always going to be a challenge that way. So how do you create your own living lab, if you will, to try to find ways to be relatable, try to find ways to bring your own personality to it? Sometimes you have to tell stories. They need to know your story because you've got a title when you're on the staff. So they're immediately going to put you in a box until they know your story. So maybe you get little opportunities to share moments about your backstory and why ball matters to you or what you've struggled with. Because maybe they think they've built some narrative, some myth about you because they don't know. And it's all wrong. So now you get them paying attention to you differently and hearing you and seeing you as more than your title. And these are all things that you have to start to learn to do to be better communicator, more relatable, able to reach that player, able to get more out of them than they thought they could, even regardless of the title that you have or role that you have on the staff. You should be actively practicing these things because if your aspiration is to run a program or to be a top assistant, then you're going to have a way of practicing this. You've got a living lab when you're in, you know, these secondary roles, if you will, right? Support staff roles. You still got an opportunity to practice the things that you will want to do later on in your career journey, in your coaching journey.
Yeah, I love that. Especially because sometimes you do find yourself in a situation where, you know, maybe the team doesn't have the best culture or maybe, you know, the head coach is having a hard time connecting. But you still have to take, like you said, you still have to take advantage of your opportunity and your title, and you have to find ways to make it work for you and the people you're serving. Despite that, you can't use that stuff as an excuse. You got to take advantage of what you're...
It's convenient, though, right?
It is. And it's human nature.
Yes, it is, right? That, oh, well, woe is me also.
Especially so this. Now, I want to ask you about this. I'm sorry.
No, especially how that will affect the culture. We keep talking about the culture.
Yeah, yeah. What about, like, especially along the lines of what we were just talking about, the season is so long, and we talk about bringing a certain energy. Do you have any, like, strategies or techniques to, you know, when it's one of those mornings where you're just dragging a little bit and, you know, you're 3 months into the season and, you know, whatever, how do you get yourself back up? How do you get yourself to that level that you want to be at?
So that's something, you know, the idea of bringing consistent energy and understanding that the grind is the grind, like that's real. How do you show up? And I just think, you know, you have to always go back to the idea and kind of the fundamental position. Do you care about your job? Do you want to be known as someone who started to surrender also because we're having a tough season, we're not getting the wins, it's not playing out the way we thought? Or do you want to be known as someone professionally that, regardless of the circumstances, was always bringing their best, right? And so what is that Tim Duncan, good, better, best, never let it rest till your good is better and your better is best, right? And so having an attitude, that was my attitude. I'm always raising my game. I'm always trying to be better. It's just important. Regardless of what's going on around me, I can control what I can control, and that's what I do and how I show up. But that's an attitude and a mindset. you listen to Mike Gervais on Finding Mastery, right? And he talks about mindset, right? And attitude and the way that we choose to show up, right? And the way that we are bringing that every day. That's your choice. That's your choice. And so I always, you know, check people that way, right? When they say, well, you know, we ain't getting the wins, probably not going to make it to conference, playoff, blah, 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 right? All these things. I say, yeah, but you can still grade yourself out for the season. So you can surrender to all those things that you have no control over, or you can absolutely say, I'm still going to be doing my level best. I'm going to continue to do the work, right? Because that's what I've been asked to do, and that's what I want to do, and I'm where I want to be. Be where your feet are, my grandfather would say, right? Stay present, be where your feet are. Stop worrying about, man, I got to get up out of here. This is it. Right? So then your work suffers. I'm already planning my exit. I'm out of here, dude, as soon as this is over, right? But then it reflects the work. And you said something at the very beginning. It is a relationship industry, correct?
100%.
So you start devaluing those relationships in mid-season because things aren't going well. Guess what's happening? Streets are talking, dude. Right. Streets are talking. They are talking. And you might not know they're talking, but they're talking. And then you want a recommendation? You want that reco from a coach, right? Or you want to go in and someone's already got your details. They got all that information about you.
Right.
That's hey, right. That guy, he'll quit on you. You want that out there? That guy will quit on you. That guy will stop doing their job if you're not. He's a front runner. She's a this, right? She's not about it. She's about it when things are going well. That's not the way you want it to play out. So that consistency, regardless, right? I can do well, me. I can bring mine, and I'm going to bring mine, and you can count on me. And that's really the greater work, right? When it's easy to be happy and high-fiving each other when we winning. It's easy. Let me see when we got a little bit of struggle. That's when people show you who they are, right? And it's a long season, and there's going to be moments. And the thing that I learned when I was, especially in the NBA, it didn't matter if you were winning or losing. There was always some drama. You were always dealing with something. And I was taken aback by that. I thought, well, gosh, look at those teams. The Bulls were amazing, right, when I was in the league, right, 95, 97. They were killing it, right? They're like the Beatles. And I'm hearing that they got challenges and things they're dealing with. I'm like, what? But they're winning. Yeah, but they're human beings and there's personalities. So don't always think that, man, look at them. They got it going on. They're winning. They got 15-game win streak. They're still dealing with stuff. So I just think that it's more of a matter of be where your feet are, stay present, handle what you can handle. Right? Circle of concern, circle of influence, all those things that you've heard a gazillion times, but they're real. They may sound cliche, but they're real. Handle the things that you can handle that are directly within your influence. Stop worrying about what other people are doing or what's going on, right? How are you showing up? And what was the thing that Mike and I both agree on? How you do the little things is how you do all things.
Yeah.
So I just think that's a big part of it is just – knowing that if I can be relatable, if I'm showing up consistently, if the players can count on me, if the staff can count on me, regardless of our record, I've done my level best. And I think that's part of it. And you also know that's the grind, right? That's part of what you signed up for.
Kevin, I've heard you talk about, you mentioned it earlier, thresholds. I've heard you talk about rituals and anchors. Can you share a little bit about some strategies to maybe designate some sacred spaces so that you can leave your human drama at the door, and when you walk into your domain, you're ready to go to battle or you're ready to work or whatever?
No, Adam, that's wonderful that you remember that, because I talked about that on Finding Mastery, and that was something that actually stuck with you. It's really important. So the idea of a threshold or crossing a threshold or – you know, entering a building, you enter the arena, the practice facility, the gym, whatever it might be. But prior to that, you're in your car, you're on public transportation, whatever it might be. But you can basically set your attitude and mindset before you enter that building. So as you know your routine and how you're getting closer to wherever your place of business is and where you're getting ready to go and put on your professional mask, right? Because it might not necessarily be who you are all the time, but you need to show up a certain way. You need to have these rituals that prepare you to cross that threshold, to take on that personality. Because there are a lot of athletes who you see playing on the court is not who they are most of the time. There are a lot of coaches who are, you know, very, you know, demonstrative and high energy and all that, but they tend to be introverted individuals, but they know this is what I need to bring the best out of my staff or my team so I can be that for that window of time. But the team also understands that they're this other person. So you're crossing a threshold when you enter the building. So how do you get your mindset prepared for that? What are the rituals? What are the practices? What are the things that you do to basically flip that mechanism, to flip that switch so that when I cross this, this is who's coming in here? And I think the more that we start to understand that we don't leave behind our personal lives, that's always a part of us, but we also have a task at hand, a job to do. And the more that you understand we have a task at hand, a job to do, you understand I need to be present. I'll say it once again, be where your feet are. So you make that decision when you get out of your car, when you get off public transportation, the bus, riding your scooter on campus, whatever it might be, but you're getting ready to enter that building. How do you take a pause? How do you have that moment before you go into the building where, like, you're breathing in, right? Whatever it might be. I'm tapping the rock, right? We've got all these little rituals that some organizations do, play like a champion, rub the rock, all these other things. Virginia Tech has Hokie Stone, rub the Hokie Stone. But they have a thing that you're crossing a threshold and you're entering this arena of competition. And there's an expectation of how you behave here and how you show up here. And it is understood. And you've agreed to repeat that and repeat that and repeat that and repeat that through the entire season. It's not that you forget that you have a personal life. It's all part of it. But you are crossing a threshold. And one of the other things that's really amazing, great coaches, great leaders are checking on their people. You good? Can I count on you? You good? Can I count on you? And you have to be honest as a member of the staff. You know, coach, I'm struggling a little bit today. Well, let's talk before we get around the players because I need you to show up and be present for them. What's going on? So that's what great leaders do. They don't make an assumption that everybody's just doing their job and everybody's good. How do I check on you? How do I make sure that I can count on you today to bring your level best, to bring your A game? I'm checking on you, but as the individual, as part of the staff, I have my rituals too, that I'm entering this arena of endeavor, of competition, so I'm crossing this threshold. Is that all making sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, and so it doesn't have to be necessarily a team ritual, like no, rubbing the rock or whatever.
No, you should have both. It should be both, micro and macro. Micro, you personal rituals, macro is the team.
So can you give us an example of like a personal ritual?
So for me, I have – so movement's my mojo. So I have to have some form of movement every morning just to get my physiology going and everything, right? So I've always been about movement. It's very important for me. And before I go on stage to do a presentation, a keynote, anything in front of any audience, I have a series of things that I say. So in my pocket, there'll be a picture of my grandmother, my mum-mum is what I call her. So my mum-mum's in my pocket, and Miss Lane, who was my best friend's mom, who became my mom. I have two pictures in my pocket. Those are my angels in my pocket, I say, right? I always have a hat on or nearby. That's my grandfather representing him, right? And so what I learned from doing work with Native American communities is that warriors need to feel safe and protected before they can go into battle. So this is the way that I protect myself. I have my angels surrounding me. So the hat, my grandfather, in my pocket, my two angels, my grandmother, and Miss Lane. And then I always say a little prayer before I go on stage. Lord, please allow me to share my gift and talent once again. Cross myself. Here we go. So that's my ritual. I do that every single time. Tap my pocket, tug on my hat, say my prayer, cross myself, here we go. Game on. That's the way it works. So people have noticed it from time to time. Most times it's off stage, but sometimes it's off to the side. And some people say, hey, I noticed that you were doing something. I said, oh, that's my ritual to allow me to go on stage to show up. And then they always ask, and I'll show a little bit of it and stuff. But I think that's something I've been doing consistently for decades when I'm performing. Athletes have lots of rituals. Do coaches have the same ones? They should. They probably started them when they were athletes. And you should continue those because it kind of grounds you, right? Those rituals ground you. And warriors need to feel protected before they go into battle. So
yeah,
how do
that.
You actively practice that? Does that make sense? I just want to make sure because a lot of this makes sense to me, right? Because I've been doing it for a long time.
Right.
So I always want to make sure, like, dude, I hope I'm not like, you know, like overwhelming him with my crazy thoughts and my whimsical ideas. But yeah, but those are my things. And now imagine in the training room, I would be having these kinds of conversations with athletes about higher purpose, about passion, about intention, about commitment. Right. Hey, have you seen this article? Hey, I thought about you. I know you're into this. And I would have things for them. I would have things for them that were part of what I knew about them. I would actively curate on behalf of those players. So they would get excited about, I wonder if Kev's going to have something for me, or does he have something for someone else? And they would marvel at how I would always remember those little things about them. And then I would actively go, and maybe I happen to see something, I grab it for him because I know you're interested in this. Hey, I know you love art by this guy. I saw this article here. Here's a link for you. Let me send that to you. Hey, I grabbed this book. I saw this. I know you're into this.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the idea. It kind of brought me back to something you said earlier. I love the idea that you about the Native American principle of, you know, warriors need to feel safe and protected. And it reminded me, you know, it goes back to like, this is a way to help you remind you of your purpose and your why. You know, these are little things that take you back to that so that now you can step into your domain with a renewed sense of purpose and being.
Yes, right. And being, right? And it's being where you are, right? Being present. And the athletes today, right, are so aware of, you know, social issues and challenges and just life, right? Because they've got access. So we have to always be aware of the fact that they come in to the building, to the practice facility, to a game with noise surrounding them. So how do we create Bose headphones kind of for them, noise reduction, to get them to focus on what we're trying to accomplish? And so you have to be really keenly aware and more present to be really paying attention to them and watching body language, word choice, how they're interacting with someone else. Is someone backing away? Is someone withdrawing from the team? You have to just be keenly aware of that because that's all culture tells and individual tells, and just pay attention. But like you said, you have to be where you are. Be where your feet are. And the more consistently you can do that, you can be successful, right? And I just truly believe that a lot of the organizations and teams that behave in a transactional way with the players versus transformational, they're the ones that struggle. If you have a transactional program where you're using up, where you're seeing them as commodities, where you're seeing them as just someone who's, you know, availing an opportunity for me to keep raising my profile so that I'm on to the next, versus transformational, where I'm really trying to raise their game and elevate them and elevate the community that surrounds us, right? And the other things will happen. If you do the right thing, the money will come, Bill Bowerman would say. If you do the right thing, all those other things you aspire to will come. Do the right thing. Do right by people. What is that other thing? You get what you give, right? You bring stank energy, you're going to get some stank energy.
Right? Right.
So, right? You bring some good energy, you're going to get good energy.
Well, and you know, we talked about culture a bunch of times. And I guess, you know, I think everybody's identified that culture is what separates, you know, average from great. But I think the coaching world has done a poor job of defining what culture is. And to me, it's exactly what you were just talking about. Are you being yourself? Are you self-aware? Are you present? And then couple that with your organization's values. Are you reflecting the values? That's culture. And are you behaving that way every day?
Yes, every day, consistently, right? Not talking out both sides of your mouth, not behaving one way over here and then this way in front of the camera.
How's your training room interaction? What's going on in there?
Right. Oh, come on. That'll tell you a lot.
Right.
It will tell you a lot.
Exactly.
It absolutely will. And I think that, you know, the people that you put in your program and your staff, right, how you select those people, right, how you identify them, it matters, you know, as a leader, right, that are you surrounding with yourself with people who are simply going to tell you yes, right, and just glam on to everything you say? Are you surrounding yourself with people who challenge you, who raise your game, right, who bring special gifts and talents to the organization and to the team, right? Are you looking at it holistically, or do you want to everyone to walk lockstep with you and be mini yous, right? All these mini me's, right? Versus, right, we've got a really unique, robust, amazing collection of individuals who bring diverse backgrounds and experiences that really elevate our team.
You've been around so many great athletes, coaches, performers. You were with the Sixers when Iverson was there. You worked with Kobe. You went on to work with Nike and work with some of the best of the best. Is there any shared trait that those guys have or anything about any individual that stuck out to you that you can share with our listeners?
The thing that I took from the myriad of athletes, the plethora, I love those words. Those are great words. Bedlam's another great one. Cacophony's another great one. Just FYI, just throwing that out there.
Yeah, what was the last one?
Cacophony, dude. Come on, noise, dude. You don't know about the cacophony.
I don't know. I got to look it up. See, I learned something new from you.
That was third grade, Miss Rock. I still remember that from there. Yes, she would walk in the room. The cacophony in this room is unbearable. We're third graders. Like, what in the world is she saying? And then her comeback would be, look it up. So that's how she actually got us to learn words, right? My other good word is diminutive. Don't you dare call me short, dude. I'm coming hard at you. I am not short. I'm diminutive.
All right.
You don't know what it means? Look it up.
I got a homework assignment. I got a few words to look up today.
Yes. So I'll say this. I always wanted to know an elite athlete beyond ball, right? Beyond the game. And what were other things that were a part of their personality and their being? And they actually just had this amazing ESPN cover story about Damian Lillard, who I've had a chance to do a couple community events with. And it's brilliant because it talks about Damian Lillard and Dame Dalla, his rap persona, and that they're not the same. Damian Lillard is this individual. Dame Dalla is this. I'll leave it at that. You should read it, though. It's brilliant. And it made me pause because I was always interested in who you are beyond ball. And I know that you're all these things in the game, and you're elite, and you're amazing, and you're special, but you're more than that. And that whole idea, more than an athlete, right? I was thinking about that many decades ago with these guys and talking to them about things that they might be concerned with or things that were of interest or things that sparked them and even trying to spark them. And once I started to learn different things, I was always really fascinated with, you know, the fact that Kobe spoke other languages, right, and was fascinated with languages. Or Allen Iverson was an amazing artist, which a lot of people don't know. Tremendous artist.
I didn't know
right?
that.
Yeah. Oh, no, tremendous. Freehand.
Like paint, he could draw, painter? Oh, draw. Okay.
He could do anything. No, he was amazing. He would draw caricatures of the coaches on the back of the white dry erase, and they would never know it. And then he'd flip it over after they'd walk out and stuff.
That's great.
They were hilarious. Yeah, he was really, really quite talented. And I was always really curious about that. What else is there to you? And inevitably, you know, they all had something else that was really just as magical for them. This is something that I'm really special at, but I'm also interested in this. This sparks me too. And that always made me aware that that was complementary to them. Because I would see Allen Iverson using the basketball court like a canvas, painting a masterpiece on it. I would see Kobe using his ideas of culture and language and love of culture, right, using that to relationship build. Yes, he would challenge you. Yes, he would push you. Yes, he would want excellence from you. but he also would put his arm around you, right? And he would say to you, I know there's more in you. But this was him understanding from living in other cultures and being worldly. So I know that there's always more to a lot of our athletes. We just have to take the time to ask. It can't always be that we're having conversations about X and O's and sideline out of bounds plays and what we're doing in defensive transitions and what happens when this is going on and dead ball situations. And I mean, yeah, I get all that, right? I glean all that being an athletic trainer and hearing that at practice. But I'm watching body language and how's their energy? Are they sustaining it for the day? How's everything going? What's going on with your fam at home? Is everybody good? Right? Because they're coming into the building with those things. So why did they have a bad performance that night? No one knew that someone was ill in their family. And they were concerned about that. And even though they could compartmentalize, you still have a part of that with you when you're sitting on the bench maybe. Right? When you're being subbed out. Then you have time to think about it. Everyone was not so compartmentalized that you could block out your life. And the more that you bring your full self, that's what I started to realize, that those were the great ones.
Mm-hmm.
That you celebrate the full, holistic being that's showing up.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. Kevin, tell us a little bit about your new book, a kid's book about belonging.
Oh, yes, yes. I just dropped a little set in the mail for you, too. So just know that that's headed towards you, Adam.
Yeah, oh, I can't wait.
I'm thrilled. So, you know, this is my fourth book, and it's my first children's book, a kid's book about belonging. And it's a part of a series, an author series, where they're talking about some real conversations. They're having real talk with young people and helping grown-ups to actually have these tough conversations. So imagine topics like racism, depression, body image, anxiety, gratitude, belonging, oh my gosh, adventure, cancer, just amazing, bullying, all these conversations. Each author is sharing, you know, ways for grown-ups to actually have a conversation with the child or to spark a conversation in a kid's book version, but they're beautifully designed, they're stunning in their simplicity, but also they're loud in what they're doing as far as sparking conversations, the real conversations that kids want to have and kids are ready for. And so I love the fact that the co-founders actually were inspired by Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the documentary that came out last year, and realized that, you know, kids want to have these conversations and we need to be ready as grown-ups to have them with them. So why not have some tools readily available? So that's what the book series is about. So mine is a kid's book about belonging. And what I said is belonging is one of my key fundamental needs that I needed as a child. And most importantly, what I'm always seeking is how to be a part of a community. And so sports has always been a big part of that. And belonging has always been something that I pay attention to and, you know, seeking it out, but also creating an environment where people feel like they're a part of something.
I love that. And we can find that on Amazon or any bookstore.
Nah, you can't find it at Amazon, which is the best part, right? It's his own publishing company.
No, yeah. I'm looking. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
It'll,
I love
it. You can go on Amazon, but it'll literally send you to their website.
Okay. Okay, great.
So akidsbookabout.com. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's so really brilliant. Yes.
Akidsbookabout.com.
Yes.
What ages is it good for?
Starts from 5 and goes on up to the kid within us all, right? So the adult, right? I call them kidults. Right. So the kid and the adult, like adults, it's good for you, too, because sometimes you realize, and I say in my belonging book, that the first place you need to belong is with yourself.
Yeah, I love that. And that's a lot of what we were talking about earlier today.
Yes.
OK, check out the book. Where can people follow along with what you're doing, Kevin?
I just find me on social. It's easy. KC Catalyst with a K. KCKATALYST. I'm on all my social that way, so it's easy to find me.
Kevin, thank you so much for being here and being with us. You talk about a need to belong to a community. And as we've talked the last couple of weeks getting ready for this conversation, you know, it's so fascinating to me that everything that you're doing, even this book, it all links back to somebody that you worked with years ago here. And, you know, you used to interact with this person and now their kid is doing this project that you're involved in. And it just goes to show how much you pour into people and you kind of create your own community, and you don't just let people and relationships flow in and out of your life. You stay involved, which is really a great example.
Transaction versus transformation, right?
Exactly. And those are lifelong for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm the old man best friend in my neighborhood, by the way. Yeah, so I know all the kids in the neighborhood too. Yeah, I'm cool with them, right? I mean, I am. So that's part of it. I just – community matters to me, and it, belonging matters to me, and it's not something that I'll ever get away from. And so I go back to my why, and this is all the way back to the beginning of our conversation. What's your why? I know my why. My why is about community and belonging. So you need to ask yourself, the listeners need to ask yourself, what's your why? And then represent that every day.
I love it. Kevin, again, thank you so much, man. I've enjoyed it.
All good, Adam. Be well. All the best here.